transcribed. From Hollywood, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. Hedda Hopper, who daily reports to 30 million readers in America and 8 foreign countries, now reports to you on the air. Here is Hedda Hopper's Hollywood, from the desk by the window, looking right down on Hollywood and Vine. And here she is, Hedda Hopper.
Hello, everybody. Look over my shoulder while I write my column. We'll have news about famous people here in Hollywood and elsewhere, and personal visits with Mike Romanoff, Alan Young, Vic Damone, and Burt Lancaster. Geraldine Fitzgerald and Stuart Sheftel expect their first child in June. They've been married 5 years. Sheftel flies to Hollywood Tuesday. He'll be Marion Davies' house guest. Mark Hellinger's widow tells me that Jay Bishop is writing her husband's biography. Jay, a former war correspondent, started as Mark's office boy. Arlene Judge's son, Wesley Ruggles Jr., celebrates his 18th birthday today. He'll join the Naval Air Force. Arlene Dahl has puzzled the town as well as Lex Barker. We're wondering if that marriage will go through. Arlene bought a packet of new clothes, supposedly, for her honeymoon, but she's wearing them on a personal appearance tour. She told me long ago she wouldn't rush into matrimony. She said, I'd rather be sure than sorry. Howard Duff has gone with Ava Gardner, Marta Torin, Ida Lupino, to name a few. And I asked him how he got such beautiful girls, and he replied, I don't know, I'm just lucky, I guess. I asked him why he never got married. I don't know, I'm just lucky, I guess. Try to write an item about a comedian. I wanted to write a very nice one about Alan Young, who's been signed to star for Paramount. His first two pictures being Aaron Slick from Punkin' Creek and Clarence.
Well, I've been mentioning your column before, Hedda. You mentioned me 2 years ago. I kept the column.
You have, Alan? Oh, that's nice. But what I wanted...
Yeah, I got it right here, Hedda. You're writing about a big Hollywood party, and you sort of mentioned me in it. It's just Clark Gable, Barbara Stanwyck. I'm further down near the bottom here, I guess. Jimmy Stewart. Oh, here we are. It says... What young comedian was seen at what nightclub with which actress on what night? That's me. I'm the second Watson the Witch.
Anyway, about this item, your stardom is the culmination of a number of honors. Recently, you won not one, but two honors from the Television Academy of Arts and Sciences. For somebody in show business, that's quite...
Show business? Oh, you know, Hedda, I wasn't raised in show business. See, back home, I worked in a pickle factory. I had a paddle, and I was a pimento patter.
Well, that's very interesting. But about those awards...
The pimento patter has a very important job. See, they put the pimentos in the olives way down this end of the factory, and as the olive passes along the belt on the way to the bottle, sometimes the pimento would work loose and hang out a little bit. So as it went past me, I'd reach out with my paddle, and I'd pat the pimento back in again.
Well, bully for you, Alan. But not to be stubborn, I want to go back to your winning two TV awards. One for having the best variety show and the other for being TV's best actor of the year. Now, as I understand, when you were on the radio...
That's what I was going to say about radio.
What?
Well, I had some very interesting things to say about sponsors. See, I was sponsored by Tums. Tums for the tummy.
Yes,
then I had Drano. You know, some fellows had pretty names for sponsors, like Star Kiss Tuna, Liquid Lip Tone Lipstick. I had Drano.
You have my deepest sympathy. But to get back to this item...
Some products used to have pretty names, Hedda, like Sweetheart Soap and Ivory Snowflakes and Sweet Air Household Deodorant. Today they got it all speeded up. They're calling them like Mum, Tums, Vel, Prel. They're working on a new soap now, I understand, for 1951. It's faster than any of these. It's just called... They follow with a hand lotion called... Now, you ladies, from now on, when you want to do your dishes, just...
write an item about a comedian. Now I'm finished, too. Goodbye, Alan Young.
Goodbye, Alan.
When Hedy Lamarr said she was retiring from the screen, she was already set for a picture. The story must have been a come-on for another one. I wonder if Hedy's pulling a Sarah Bernhardt stunt. The divine Sarah kept making farewell appearances for 25 years. Governor Don Thornton of Colorado will preside over the premiere of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Vengeance Valley, which stars Burt Lancaster and Bob Walker in Canyon City, Colorado. And incidentally, Burt and his partner, Harold Hecht, are looking for the three sexiest girls in the world for their picture about the Foreign Legion. Remember the old saying, them that has gets? Well, that applies to our designer, Adrian. He owns a ranch in the valley, and I'll be darned if he hasn't struck oil on it. The other day, I was driving down the Sunset Strip when I noticed a crowd of autograph seekers clustered around the Macombo. It was early afternoon, so, of course, my curiosity was aroused. When I entered, I saw the reason for all the excitement. MGM was shooting the last scenes of its new picture, The Strip. And the handsome young man on whom the cameras were focused was Vic Damone.
When your kiss as sweet as a kiss can be, when will your child help in my arms, the dogs blame me.
This is a big week for you, isn't it, Vic? Your first two pictures both finished this week.
That's right, Miss Hopper. This one are rich, young, and pretty.
So are you.
Hmm? Now, take it easy.
What's the matter, Vic? Don't you like to be called young?
I don't like to be called rich.
Oh, but you will be rich if you keep turning out those best-selling records. My teenage friends tell me your newest, called If, is really something. Come on, how about singing it for me now?
For you, anything, Miss Hopper. If.
If what?
Well, that crack about rich, young, and pretty.
Oh, Vic, I was only kidding. But you are good-looking, and when you walked into it like that, what did you expect me to say?
Well, I thought you might have mentioned it's in Technicolor.
Sing, Vic, sing.
If they made me a king, I'd be but a slave to you. If I had everything, I'd still be a slave to you. If I rule the night, stars and moon so bright, till I turn for bowed yet humbly, I plead to you. If my friends were a crowd, I'd turn in my knee to you. If I were the earth, what would life be worth? If I had the right to you, I'd be but a slave to you. If I had everything,
I'd still be a slave to you.
If I rule the night, stars and moons so bright, still I turn for life to you. Yet humbly, I plead for you. my friends will cry for turning my knee to you. If I were the earth, what would life be worth? If I am right to
blame them, and if I were 21, I'd be a slave to you, too. Vic Damone at 22. He's quite a boy. Frank Freeman, head of Paramount Studios, phoned to tell me the Daryl Zanuck's picture, I'd Climb the Highest Mountain, reflects great credit on our entire industry. That's the first time the head of a studio telephoned to praise a rival's picture. Paulette Goddard isn't going to see her boyfriend, Cy Howard, for a month. He's taken a house in Palm Springs and locked himself in with his secretary to write an original story. You know, last time he did this, he came out with That's My Boy for Martin and Lewis. Carmen Miranda, who's introduced many new fashions, is now coming out in spangled slacks. I can understand how Harold Lloyd could ride a pair of shell-rimmed glasses into $1 million, how Hattie Carnegie snipped her way into fame with a pair of shears, but right here in Hollywood, an old friend of mine has squeezed the most amazing, screaming success out of an eagle with a pair of heads. And he's always remained an enigma. I mean, Prince Mike Romanoff.
You call me an enigma, Heather? Oh, no. It's just that my father always told me to give people what they demand.
And you know perfectly well what I mean, this double-headed eagle business, the imperial crest. There's some doubt, you know, about your father being the Tsar, the Tsar's brother, cousin, or even his bookie.
It is a wise child who knows what he wants his father to be.
But if there is, let's say, some shadow over your princely title, how can you go on and keep up the pretense?
I give the people what they demand.
You know, the first time I saw those eagles was on the door in the Writers' Building of the 20th Century Fox studio. A crown instead of your name, like everybody else. Now it's on everything you own.
I'd rather be an eagle than a pigeon.
Oh, that's something you'll never be, Mike. You have the swankiest restaurant in Beverly Hills. You serve excellent food. But how do you get away with some of those other things? Putting up a velvet rope and not letting people in, even if you have empty tables. And now you're going to move and make the restaurant even smaller, more exclusive, harder to get into.
I give the people what they demand.
You act every inch a prince. You kiss the ladies' hands.
I give the ladies what they demand.
Yes, you take sophisticated people in one of the most sophisticated cities in the world and by sheer audacity make them accept you as a prince. How come?
The only one who's truly concerned with the difference between real and false is a dentist. Isn't that so, Heather?
What?
Besides, as my father told me...
I know. Give people what they demand.
But, my dear Heather, let me ask you a question. Why is it you invite me to be your guest and expect me to answer all these personal questions?
My dear Mike, I also have to give my audience what they demand. I tried my best, but I'm afraid Mike Romanoff will have to remain our enigma. Who was it said monkeys are the craziest people? Well, Ronnie Regan, after playing with a chimp in Bedtime for Bonza, says it ain't true. Chimps are the craziest people. You'll be seeing June Allison and Dick Powell when he comes to your town for his picture, Cry Danger. June says she's only going for the ride, but I'll bet you my new hat that when Dick takes a bow, she'll be right up there on the stage with him. The Hollywood Canteen opens here soon, but only on weekends. There aren't enough servicemen here yet to make it a full-time job. Over 25 years ago, Ernest Hemingway wrote a short story that's become an American classic, reprinted time and again. 5 years ago, it was expanded by Mark Hellinger into an outstanding movie. Well, there was a young man whose memorable performance in that Universal International movie lifted him right into stardom, Burt Lancaster. And tonight, Burt Lancaster will pay tribute to that fine picture and to the great story which started it all, to Hemingway's The Killers.
I can tell that story as Ole Anderson, the Swede, part I played in the movie. The Swede, lying in a cheap furnished room. A kid named Nick Adams had just been there. He just left. But he just told me everything. Yeah. Nick Adams had told me what had happened, what he'd seen. Sure, I wasn't there, but I could tell how it happened, right from the beginning. From the beginning, when the door of George's lunch counter opened, and two men came in. They sat down at the counter.
What's yours, gents?
I don't know. What do you want to eat, Al?
I don't know. I don't know what I want to eat.
Outside, it was getting dark, then. The street light came on outside the window. The two men at the counter read the menu. From the other end of the counter, Nick Adams watched them. He'd been talking to George when they came in. George owned the place.
I'll have the roast pork tenderloin with the applesauce and the mashed potato.
It isn't ready yet.
What are you putting on the card for?
That's the dinner. We can get that at 6 o'clock. It's only 5 o'clock.
Clock says 20 minutes past 5.
It's 20 minutes fast.
Give me the chicken croquettes with the green peas, cream sauce, and mashed potatoes.
That's the dinner.
Everything we want's the dinner? Is that the way you work it?
Well, I can give you ham and eggs, bacon and eggs.
I'll take ham and eggs.
The man called Al ordered ham and eggs.
Give me bacon and eggs.
The other man's name was Max. He was about the same size as Al. Their faces were different, but they were dressed like twins. Both wore overcoats too tight for them. They sat leaning forward, their elbows on the counter.
That's a hot town. What do they call it?
Summit.
What do you do here nights?
They eat the dinner. They all come here and eat the big dinner.
That's right.
So you think that's right?
Sure.
You're a pretty bright boy, aren't you?
Sure.
Well, you're not. Is he, Al?
He's dumb. Hey, what's your name down there? Hey, you.
Me? Adams. Nick Adams.
Another bright boy. Any a bright boy, Max.
Town's full of bright boys.
George got the food. He put the two platters, one of ham and eggs, the other of bacon and eggs, on the counter. He set down two side dishes of fried potatoes and closed the wicket into the kitchen. Both men ate with their gloves on. George watched them eat until they were finished.
What's a bright boy's name down the counter? Nick Adams?
Hey, bright boy. Go around on the other side of the counter with your boyfriend.
What's the idea?
There isn't any idea.
Better go around, bright boy.
The idea?
None of your business. Who's out in the kitchen?
The cook?
What do you mean, the cook?
Listen, who do you think you are?
We know where we are. Do we look silly? Now tell the cook to come out here.
Sam? Come in here a minute.
Sam the cook stood in his apron, looking at the two men sitting at the counter. Al got down from his stool.
I'm going back to the kitchen with the cook and bright boy Nick Adams. Go on back to kitchen, cook. You go with him, bright boy.
The little man walked after Nick and Sam back into the kitchen. The door shut after them. The man called Max sat at the counter opposite George. He didn't look at George, but he looked in the mirror that ran along the back of the counter. George's place had been made over from a saloon into a lunch counter.
Well, George, why don't you say something?
What's it all about?
Hey, Al. Bright boy wants to know what it's all about.
Why don't you tell him?
What do you think it's all about?
I don't know.
What do you think?
Oh, I wouldn't say.
Hey, Al. Bright boy says he wouldn't say what he thinks it's all about.
I can hear you all right. Listen, bright boy. Stand a little farther along the bar. You move a little to the left, Max.
Al was in the kitchen, but he propped open the slit, the one they used to pass dishes through into the kitchen with a ketchup bottle. He was like a photographer arranging for a group picture.
I tell you what's going to happen, George. We're going to kill a Swede. You know a big Swede named Ole Anderson?
Yeah?
He comes here to eat every night, don't he?
Sometimes he comes here?
Comes here at 6 o'clock, don't he?
What are you going to kill Ole Anderson for? What did he ever do to you?
He never had a chance to do anything to us. He never even seen us.
And he's only going to see us once.
What are you going to kill him for, then?
We're killing him for a friend. Just to oblige a friend, Bright Boy.
Shut up, Mac. You talk too much.
I got to keep Bright Boy amused, don't I? Bright Boy?
You talk too much. Cook and my Bright Boy are amused by themselves. I got them tied up like love bites on a bus.
Shut up. Listen, George. If anybody comes in here, right?
Hello, George.
Hello.
Can I get supper?
Sam's gone out. He'll be back in about half an hour.
Oh. I better go up the street.
That was nice, Bright Boy. You're a regular little gentleman.
He knew I'd blow his head off.
Nah, it ain't that. Bright Boy's nice. He's a nice boy. I like him.
It's after 6. The Swede's not coming.
We'll give him time, Bright Boy.
Anderson isn't going to come. Look at the clock.
We'll give him 5 minutes.
But in 5 minutes, it was another man came in. George explained that the cook was sick. The man went out.
All right, George. You win. Come on, Al.
What about the two Bright Boys and the cook?
They're all right. We're through with it.
I don't like it. It's sloppy. You talk too much.
Who cares? Gotta keep them amused, ain't we?
Talk too much all the same. So long, Bright Boy. Got a lot of luck.
Yeah. You ought to play the races, Bright Boy.
George watched them through the window, pass under the arc light and cross the street. In their tight overcoats and derby hats, they must have looked like a vaudeville team. George went back to the swinging door into the kitchen and untied Nick Adams and the cook.
I'll have you out of this in a minute now, Nick.
Hey, what the heck?
They were going to kill Ole Anderson. They were going to shoot him when he came in to eat.
The Swede?
Sure. I don't like it. I don't like any of it at all.
Oh, listen, I'd better go see him.
All right, but don't go if you don't want to. Mixing up in this isn't going to get you anywhere.
No, no, I'd better go see him. Where's he live?
Hirsch's rooming house.
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard Nick ring the bell. The landlady let him in. He came up the stairs into my room. Me, the Swede, just lying there on my bed with my clothes on. I was a heavyweight prize fighter once. The bed's too short. I just lay there with my head on two pillows. Kid told me what happened back at George's. All of it.
But the two fellas came in and tied up me and the cook, and they said they were going to kill you. They put us out in the kitchen. They were going to shoot you when you came into supper. George thought I'd better come and tell you about it.
There isn't anything I can do about it.
Don't you want me to go and see the police?
No. That wouldn't do any good.
Isn't there something I could do?
There ain't anything to do.
Maybe it was just a bluff.
It ain't just a bluff. The only thing is, I just can't make up my mind to go out. I've been in here all day.
Couldn't you get out of town?
I'm through with all that running around. There ain't anything to do now.
Couldn't you fix it up some way?
No. I got in wrong. There ain't anything to do. After a while, I'll make up my mind to go out.
I better go back and see George.
So long. Thanks for coming around. thing to do. But you saw him, didn't you?
He's in his room.
He won't go out. Did you tell him about it?
Sure, I told him, but he knows what it's all about.
They'll find him. They'll kill him.
It's an awful thing. Wonder what he did.
Double-cross somebody. That's what they kill him for.
I'm going to get out of this town.
Yeah. That's a good thing to do.
I can't stand to think about him. Waiting in that room, knowing he's going to get it. It's too awful.
There ain't anything to do. I got it wrong. When you get in wrong, there ain't anything to do. They'll find me. They're coming. But there ain't anything to do.
Sometimes the day's events leave me feeling as trapped and bewildered as Ole Anderson. My understanding of international affairs didn't improve any last week. The United Nations branding of communist China as the aggressor in the Korean War left me more puzzled than ever. I couldn't help but wonder why this family of nations waited 7 months and 40,000 casualties, mostly American boys, before acting. The war in Korea started in June 1950. The United Nations sanctioned use of troops under its banner the moment the North Koreans struck. Everyone, apparently, except the UN, knew the Chinese Reds were back of the North Koreans. If there was any doubt, it was dissipated last December when these Reds swooped down and nearly drove our troops into the sea. Still, the UN debated 2 months before tagging the Reds aggressors. I don't get it. And the Korean mess isn't the only international puzzle to me. What about the billions we poured into Europe since the Marshall Plan? Has it done this country any good? Is our aid appreciated? The commies booed General Ike Eisenhower in Paris and Rome. They still call us Uncle Shylock. For a nation which has no territorial ambitions, this doesn't sound right to me. We want nothing from any nation except its goodwill. We want no war. We're spending ourselves bankrupt trying to maintain peace. Yet we seem to be hated by many of the people receiving our aid. Can it be you cannot buy respect and goodwill with dollars? Can it be that deeds count more than cash in the final payoff? Well, it's something for the gentlemen in Washington to think about.
Bring you Hedda Hopper with news of the stars and the stars that make news. We will visit with the charming Western star, Carolina Cotton, another exciting guest in Hollywood, Sharman Douglas. And for a dramatic moment, our star will be Douglas Fairbanks Jr.
Good night, everybody.
And make a date for next Sunday for Hedda Hopper's Hollywood. From the ringside seat, the desk by the window looking right down on Hollywood and Vine.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Theater Guild on the Air presents Come Back, Little Sheba, starring Gary Cooper and Shirley Booth next. For drama of another kind, authentic drama from the plains of the West, hear Joel McRae later when he stars in Tales of the Texas Rangers, modern-day stories of the nation's oldest police force. Theater Guild's next with Shirley Booth and Gary Cooper on NBC.